from Italy. This is Stack Trace, the show where we talk about Apple news and rumors from a developer's perspective. And we may be sounding a little bit different today, right, John?
That's right, because we are recording from a hotel room here in Milan in Italy, which is the first time we've done anything like this. And yeah. Rambo, I think you can put a picture in the current chapter art just to see how crazy the setup is, because it looks really funny.
Yeah. So, yeah, editing is going to be a little bit more challenging than usual, but I think we're going to be fine. And this is going to be a great episode.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And we got a hotel room with great acoustics, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's always very important, all of you listeners, when you book your hotel room. Like, the most important is not how fancy the hotel is or how good the breakfast is or what the location is. It's the acoustics, right? It's all about the acoustics.
Exactly. Make sure you get a room with excellent acoustics like the one we got here.
Lots of soft fabrics, like soft floor, soft ceiling, soft walls. It's perfect. Everything is soft.
Exactly. So, John, tell our listeners about our trip. What are we doing? Why are we in Italy?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. So me and Rambo, we just attended App Builders in Switzerland, which is not Italy, but super close to it. Like, in fact, we are right now only about an hour by driving from where the conference was in Switzerland, because it was in the Italian part of Switzerland. And we had a great conference there. App Builders is one of my favorite conferences. I've been to all of the four editions. It's been really, really great. And Rambo gave a talk, which was really good, about privacy and security. And I did something that I've never done before, which is that I was the MC, or the presenter, of the conference. So I was introducing all the speakers and doing a little bit of intro and things like that. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I flew here from Canada, from Montreal, where I was attending NS North.
Yeah, that's quite hardcore. You were like going back-to-back conferences, right? Yeah. First you were literally like in Canada, and then you came all the way over to here to Europe, and then you like went directly to the conference.
Exactly.
That was really, really cool.
Yeah, so it was an amazing experience. NS North was a great conference. And I say was because, unfortunately, this was the last edition of NS North.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Yeah, but I think they ended with a very good conference. And I met so many cool people there. I will name a few, but if I don't name you, don't feel bad, because it's really hard to remember. But like, everyone there was amazing. I met James Thompson. I met Ken Koshenda. I met our friend of the show, Renee Ritchie.
Oh, yeah.
I also met James's wife as well. Super fun. And she talked about doing QA at Apple, which she did. And that was very interesting. And also Ish. I met Ish there. And,
oh, nice.
Yeah, he's a really cool guy. And many others. So, yeah, it was a really, really good conference.
Yeah, I've heard some really, really good things about NS North. It's too bad that I could never attend it. I hope that they will resurrect it someday, because I've always wanted to go to Canada too. Like, as someone who comes from like a northern country, Sweden, I would love to go to Canada just to see like what the similarities are and still like what the differences are, because it seems like it's a really interesting country. And also NS North seems to be a very special conference in many ways, because they are doing like a special setup with how you sit and how the talks are done. And yeah, it's from what you told me also, it sounded like it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, the venue for the conference used to be a really old bank.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it had these columns and these huge windows and huge ceiling. So, yeah, it was very interesting and very nice. The catering was amazing. We had some really good food there. App Builders food was also amazing. Like, these conferences, they are very good with catering.
They're stepping up their food game for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that, you know, as someone who's been to a lot of conferences, I think a lot of organizers also have kind of realized the importance of having good food. And not only like the food is, you know, the best food ever, or like luxury food, but rather that it's like enough for everybody. You know, it's scheduled nicely. You have generous coffee breaks. Because one thing that's really important for me when I go to conferences is the talks that are on stage and the presenters. Like, that's of course very important. That's like setting the stage for the whole conference and the whole event. But for me, that the things that I really enjoy the most is all the conversations that you have with people. You know, talking to people, hearing what they work with, hearing what their challenges are, what they've done to solve their problems. And that's what happens during like the lunch and the coffee breaks. So having really like good food and a good setup for that, I think it's really just facilitating so many great discussions.
And speaking of that, you did the opening keynote for App Builders. And I heard you talked about how to make the most out of a conference. So why don't you share your tips with our listeners?
Sure. So I didn't do the opening keynote, but I did do a little bit of a just warm-up mini keynote, like pre-keynote,
yeah,
if you will.
It was just a short mini keynote.
It was very short. It was like three slides, but of course there were like 10 animations in these three slides because you always need to have a good animation to slide ratio. So yeah, I came up with these three tips because, again, I've been traveling to a lot of conferences and I have come up with three things that I think could be good to keep in mind if you're going to a conference, just to kind of try to get the most out of your experience. So the first thing is really to focus. Like, I see a lot of people, they come to a conference and they just spend the whole day like sitting in the room with Slack open, and they're doing code reviews and they're coding and not really paying any attention. And again, like, if that's what you want to do, if that floats your boat, then great. But I would really encourage as many people as possible to try to like log out of Slack, like check your email in the evening, unless there's some kind of emergency, which people will probably reach you like through phone or iMessage or something. You might not need to be on Slack entirely like you would during a work day, because that really, I think, makes it harder, at least for me personally, to really focus on what's going on during the conference and, again, to miss out on some of those great conversations. So I personally try to not look at my phone too much during a conference. Of course, I check it like every once in a while just to make sure what's going on. But when I'm in the talks, I just put my phone in my pocket and I just focus. So that would be my number one tip. And then the second tip is really to talk to as many people as you can, because even though I realize that not everyone is like, you know, super social and maybe a little bit shy, and maybe it's your first conference, you're maybe not super comfortable like going up to a stranger, I think like really trying as much as you can to get over that and really just go up and join a conversation. Like if you see some people standing around talking, just see what it's all about. And this really kind of leads into tip number three, which is to not worry so much that, you know, you are going to embarrass yourself or something like that, or something else, because everyone who is in a conference is really there for the same reason. And that's to share and learn information, right? To share things like what they're doing and to learn things from other people. So to really keep those things in mind, like, you know, when you go up to talk to someone, if they're an iOS developer and you're an iOS developer, they're struggling with Xcode just like you. They are struggling with Massive View controllers just like you. Like, everyone is facing the same kind of problems, and the power of conferences is that we can start sharing our solutions to those problems.
Yeah, I am an introvert, believe it or not. So I've had issues with trying to socialize at conferences before. But it really clicked to me when I started thinking about how everyone there is just the same as me. Like, they're just there to learn. They are also probably mostly introverts, because that's common in our audience.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just like decided to... It is hard still, but I really try to like say hi to people and not just pass through people and then not look at them. And yeah, really try to focus on being there for the people and talking to people. And you know so many cool people in these conferences. Sometimes you'll be talking to someone and you'll realize that they work on an app you really love.
Right, like, exactly.
It happened at App Builders. I was talking to someone and they worked on Ulysses, which is the writing app I use.
That's perfect.
So
yeah.
I was like, oh my God, I love Ulysses. Thank you very much. Yeah. And I also met someone at NSNARF who used to work on Sketch, which is also another app I really love. So, and they worked on like the plugin system of Sketch, which I really love. So I was like, oh, thank you.
That's really perfect. And that only happens like when you start like being curious and really like, you know, asking people what they're doing and, you know, what kind of apps they work on and things like that. That's when those things happen. And like, it's so cool. Like, because at the end of the day, everyone who is like building an app, or even if they're on stage presenting, like, we're all just developers, we're all just people, right? And, you know, when we're attending a conference, we're all just attendees all there for the same kind of reason. So I think those things are great to keep in mind just to kind of really get the most out of each conference, because, you know, a conference can take a cost money to go to, it can take time to go to, you know, it's a big commitment to go to a conference sometimes, and really to try to get the most value out of that, I think, you know, is good to try to do. Cool. So we're both traveling right now. And for anyone who's traveling, you know, abroad to new countries and things like that, you've probably had to deal with the fun thing of how do you get internet and do roaming and make sure your phone works when you are abroad. And that can sometimes be, you know, easier said than done. So first, Rambo, I wanted to ask you how you've been solving this problem. You mentioned on a previous episode that you were going to sign up for some kind of eSIM service to get data when you're here. So how's that been working out for you?
Yeah, so previously on my other international trips I took, I used this service, this Brazilian service, where they ship a SIM card to you. And you say the country you're going to, the dates, and they just send you a SIM card. So I had like the SIM card in my wallet, and I had a SIM eject tool in my wallet to like exchange the SIM card when I arrived. But now with the eSIM support and dual SIM support on the new iPhones, and I have the XS Max, which I use all the time, I decided to try out this app called GigSky. So they are a service that's not a sponsor, by the way. they are an app and a service that provides you with eSIM for several different countries. So basically open the app, you say the country you're going to, you select a plan. I purchased, I think, 5 gigabytes for $50. So it's not exactly cheap, but it's very convenient. And you activate it using the iOS flow that Apple offers. And you choose to use it as a data only card, a SIM card, and you have two lines, and your original line is still active, and you can keep using it. In my case, I don't have roaming, so it just says no service.
Right.
But it keeps my phone number active on my iPhone.
That's perfect.
And that's the most important part, because when you change SIM cards, and as you know, what happens, John, when you change physical SIM cards?
When you change SIM cards, all of your Apple devices will say, you've got a new phone number. We've changed your phone number for iMessage. And that can actually be really bad, because if people are using your phone number to iMessage you, sometimes you won't get those messages until you change back to your other SIM card. And that's kind of strange to me in a way. I kind of understand why it is like that, because the way iMessage was created was to like be heavily integrated with normal SMS, like with normal texts. So I understand that part. But on the other hand, it can be really inconvenient, because people just think that you'll get those messages, right? They just iMessage you on your phone number, but then you just get them when you come back home. So that can be really inconvenient. So it's great that eSIM kind of takes care of this.
Yeah, the eSIM prevents you from having to drive to a McDonald's parking lot.
Exactly. So before we record an episode of Stack Trace, we always create these like show notes, like a little pages document that we share with each other. And in this pages document, we have two bullet points for this topic. And the first one is Rambo's experience of using an eSIM, and then John's experience of changing SIM cards in the McDonald's parking lot.
Yeah, because that's what happened.
That's what happened. So yeah, I was using a different SIM card for Switzerland, and now I'm using my normal SIM card here in Italy, because in the European Union, we have free roaming across all the different countries, but Switzerland is not in the European Union. So that made it a little bit more difficult. So yeah, I had to stop at the border, change, because of course, you can't be offline for 2 minutes, right?
Exactly.
Need to get online as soon as possible.
Yeah, but I mean, that's really important. And I really enjoy being able to, like, the plane has just landed, you take it off airplane mode, and you have a connection. Like,
yeah,
that's just perfect. And you there's always stuff you have to check. You have to check, like, the train you have to get, and if you have a connection, you have to check the airplane, and if it's going to be delayed or something. And, of course, you want to keep in touch with people, so I really enjoy landing with an internet connection.
Yeah.
And my flight from Canada to Switzerland actually had Wi-Fi, and it was pretty good Wi-Fi, so I was
nice.
Very happy about that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I really recommend it if you are going to be traveling abroad, try out the dual SIM using the eSIM. It's really, really great, and I think it's worth it. So
cool. We'll put a link in the show notes to the service that you used.
Yeah, I used it twice already because I purchased a plan for Canada, and when I was in Canada, I purchased a plan for Switzerland.
Nice. And another thing we discussed on an earlier episode was whether or not the eSIM that is in the Apple Watch will work when you're abroad. And I can confirm it does not. And that's actually also pretty convenient in this case because I didn't want to use any roaming when I was in Switzerland because that would cost me a lot of money. It's like hilariously expensive. You know, it's like 1 megabyte of data for like $100 or something. You know, it's like, it's really crazy. So I was kind of concerned about that, but then I checked and yeah, indeed the Apple Watch does not roam. And I think that might actually be part of the reason because you wouldn't really think about it, right? Because it's an eSIM. So you wouldn't think about, you know, will this cost me extra? And then you would just go to another country and you would work up this crazy bill. So I'm in this case, I'm happy. And since I am at this point using my phone whenever we go somewhere, since I'm not at home right now, then it's fine because, you know, the Apple Watch has the internet connection from the iPhone. So that's cool.
Yeah. And I also want to mention, since we're speaking about traveling abroad and the aspects of using an Apple device abroad, I bought a smart battery case for my XS Max.
And it's very heavy.
It's humongous. Yeah. It's, well, I describe it as awful and awesome at the same time.
Right. Double A.
So I don't know what it is, if it's like the cell signal or whatever, but probably I use the device a lot more as well. And I'm using GPS to find locations and stuff like that. So my battery runs out very quickly when I'm abroad. And I decided to get a smart battery case to try and improve that. And I can confirm that it in fact does, like it lasts the entire day and some change with the smart battery case. So, and I'm not going to be using it day to day. As soon as I'm home, I'm taking it off because it's horrible. It makes your iPhone really huge and heavy, especially the XS Max.
Yeah, it's literally like the heaviest iPhone you can make, yeah. Right? Like it's the largest iPhone with the battery case.
It looks like a tank.
It really does, yeah. But it is convenient. It's like, it's a trade-off, right? Like when yes. We're developers, we're always talking about trade-offs and it's like you're actually trading off some weight or you're adding weight in order to have better battery. So yeah, I think that makes sense in this case, but I personally wouldn't go for it. I would pretty much like rather turn off my phone or enter airplane mode just to like really conserve battery or turn on the low power mode. Because yeah, I'm, as we've talked about before, like I like thin, light devices. Like I'm not a big fan of heavy things.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I'm liking it because it's convenient. I don't have to worry about battery life.
Yeah, that's good. Plus you can maybe you know, add some muscle in your arms, right? It's yeah. Like going to the gym just to pick up your phone.
And if I have to defend myself, you can just throw it at a person's head. You can kill someone, I think.
Yeah, well, don't try that at home.
Yeah.
All right, so we have some cool topics for this episode. We're going to do, of course, a Rambo report. We have some cool information about the upcoming MacBook Pros that may or may not happen. And we also want to talk a little bit about the concept of predictive computing. Yeah, it's going to be fun. But before we do, let's take a very quick break and thank this episode's sponsor, which is our good friends at Withings. You can get a special 20% discount on Withings Sleek Smart Scale when you visit withings.com/stacktrace. This scale is called the Buddy Plus, and it works with Withings HealthMate app for the iPhone and the Apple Watch to automatically sync readings, not just for weight, but for body fat, water percentage, muscle mass, and so much more. And all of this data also directly goes into Apple's Health app, which is really, really convenient. You'll of course also see your weight and body data displayed directly in real time on the scale as well. It has a big and bright display. It also shows you your weight trends for the past week. And this is a cool thing, I think. It also shows a little daily forecast, which can, you know, help you pick out your outfit of the day or something like that. The Buddy Plus features an incredibly sleek and high-end design with a large surface that's easy to stand on. It's made from high-strength tempered glass, and it features a paint-free casing as well. Another cool feature of the Buddy Plus is that it supports multiple users, and it automatically detects who is currently standing on the scale, and it automatically syncs all the right data to that person's device. There's also a built-in baby mode, there's a pregnancy tracker, there's all sorts of extra features for specific use cases, which is really cool. So I've been trying out the scale recently, and I must say, I've really grown to really like it. Like, It's great that you can both see your weight, of course, like that's a feature of a scale, but the fact that you get the historic data makes it so much easier to track, like if you're trying to lose weight, like I am, and seeing those additional parameters, like for example, your hydration levels, can be really, really great in order to make like informed decisions on whether or not you need to rehydrate or, you know, how you're doing with your muscle mass, if you're trying to go to the gym and things like that. So I think the scale is really cool. All the features it offers, the way it syncs to your iPhone, it's really, really nice. So make sure to check out this Body Plus Smart Scale from Withings and to take advantage of this special 20% discount by going to withings.com/stacktrace. But you do have to hurry a little bit because this offer is only valid until May the 3rd. You can also get the same deal from Amazon as well, and there's going to be a link in the show notes for that. Either way, you help support this show and me and Rambo's work. And again, that's withings.com/stacktrace for 20% off the Body Plus Smart Scale from Withings. Thanks so much to Withings for sponsoring Stacktrace. All right, so I have this topic here, which I've been thinking about for a while, and I was kind of talking to you, Rambo, about this, like, how, especially with the Apple Watch, now that I've been wearing it full time for a while again, it feels like the Apple Watch is really trying to be more of a predictive computer. Like it's trying to more predict what you are doing at the moment. Like for example, it might show you different alerts and different information, and it might do something like when you are walking outside, it can show you, it looks like you're walking, do you want to record it as a workout? So I think this is kind of fascinating where so far, most of the devices we use, we need to explicitly tell them what to do. Like we need to say, now I want to write an article, here's my text editor. Now I want to watch a video, here's my video app. But especially with the Apple Watch and with some of the Siri features on iOS, the device is kind of telling us what it thinks we want to do. So what do you think about this? And do you think like this is an area that we're going to see kind of more and more things happening within?
Yeah, I think this is an area that's been in development for quite a while already. Apple has had, I think, some form of this since some, like iOS 9 or something, where it would suggest you some apps in the lock screen, like an icon would appear in the lock screen for you to open an app depending on your location or iBeacons and stuff like that. But since especially iOS 11, they've really been pushing the proactive approach for Siri. And I think it's a good approach and it's going to get better probably, and it needs to get better. And what types of suggestions do you think would be useful to you other than the workouts?
I think the main thing for me is that what I would like to see more is like the devices making decisions based on each other. So for example, like if you have an iPhone, you have an Apple Watch, you have an iPad, you have a Mac, you have quite a lot of devices. And the way these are in use at the moment could pretty much paint a picture of what you're doing, right? So one example of this that already exists is that if you sit in front of your Mac and you wake it up and you have your Apple Watch, it will unlock, right? So that's like predictive computing in a way, because it's like, okay, you have an Apple Watch, you're sitting in front of your Mac, those two signals go in and say the Mac should unlock itself, right? But I think you could do even more with those kind of things. And for example, if you are editing a document on your iPad, you can use the handoff feature, but wouldn't it be great if like you were editing something, you're already copying something, some text or something, and then when you open up the phone, it could already suggest to you that you want to maybe move that text into a new document or something like that. Or you are copying an image on the iPhone, it could already suggest to you that you might want to put that into the document or something like that. Like I feel like a lot of things that come with handoff that are currently require like explicit user interaction, you have to wait for it, you know, it takes a while. Again, it's the difference between the computer guessing and already preparing what it is that it thinks you want to do versus you having to tell it what to do and then wait for it to do that.
Yeah, I think I've seen something in Springboard where it would kind of predict when you're about to launch the camera.
Right.
Yeah, and you will like pre-warm the camera so it will be ready for you as quickly as possible. That's something Apple prouds themselves about, like that the camera on iOS launches really quickly and you'll never lose a picture because you couldn't launch the camera in time.
Yeah.
So I think that's one area where they added that. And I feel like the shortcut situation could also help a lot in that area, where it could suggest you shortcuts you use frequently based on time. Mm-hmm. And it already kind of does that, but it seems to be too light-handed. Like, it's just every now and then it will suggest something, but it could be a lot more prominent.
Yeah. Also, like, within apps, one great example I think of this is in IA Writer, which is the text editor I use for writing all my articles. If you have a link in the clipboard and you press Command K, which is what you use to make a markdown link of a word, it will actually take that URL that you have in the clipboard and already link to it. Which I think is that's another like feature along those lines where it's making an assumption to say, you know what, you just copied a link and now you want to make a link. You probably want to use that link that you just copied. And I think those kind of features it just makes everything so much seamless when you use it.
Yeah, and I use an app called Parcel for tracking deliveries, and it detects if you have a tracking code in the clipboard. So when you go and you press the plus button to create a new delivery, it pastes automatically.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah. That's really great.
That's another example. It doesn't have to be this super complicated machine learning thing. It can be just like, yeah, I have this. And also another example that I see, at least in Brazil, it's very common. I don't know how it is in other countries, but when you address forms usually start with the zip code,
uh-huh.
and based on the zip code, they fill in the street address, the city, state, everything, and you only have to enter your number.
Oh yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, because what really like I think this is all about is like trying to make it more seamless to perform like those 90% of tasks, because sometimes you do need to override it, so the computer can't go like, you know, oh, I just deleted all these files because I thought you might want to do that, right? So, and also, like, it can't really be any destructive actions in general, but I do like it really, like, especially with the Apple Watch when it is making those guesses, and it's really delightful when you are out walking and you're having, like, a walk at a quick pace. It will tell you, like, hey, it looks like you're walking. Do you want to record this? And it will already have recorded, actually, in the background for a while. So it does those recordings and then asks you if that's a valid recording, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, you mentioned about having control, and it reminded me of this 2006 movie called Click. Have you watched that?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
So the guy could control his life using this remote control, but every time he did something with the remote control, it would learn and always repeat the same action for the same situation.
Right.
Yeah. So that was like a lack of control over the automation.
Another thing that could happen. So on the Mac, for example, there is, you know, there's Automator, there's scripts, there's a lot of things we can do to automate actions. And I use that a lot to like automate different workflows. For example, like publishing one of my articles, I have a command line tool to take my markdown file to add syntax highlighting using Splash and to then like format it the way I want, so I can just then paste that into the Squarespace CMS, which is what I'm currently using for my website. And I could, of course, automate that further. Like I can write some Apple script to actually go to the Squarespace website, click the right things. But wouldn't it be great if you're performing similar actions, the Mac could detect that and it could say, it looks like on Sundays, you are using iWriter to write an article, then you're using this command line tool, then you're going to this website and pasting it. How about I create a little script for you? How about I automatically create a workflow for this specific thing you're doing so that you wouldn't have to write it yourself? And that, I think, could be a really cool thing to kind of thread the line between guessing too much and not having to do that manually, because it's not hard enough. Like going to the Squarespace website, pasting something, that's not hard enough that I'm willing to sit down and write a script for it. But it would be great to have all that automated.
Yeah, definitely. Another example I just remember is when I connect my AirPods to my iPad, it automatically suggests the YouTube app.
Right.
Yeah, because I use my iPad a lot to watch videos while I'm having dinner or something.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so it knows that when I plug the AirPods in, I probably want to launch YouTube.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
And this is, of course, a little bit of a limit of iOS itself, but wouldn't it even be greater if like you could just take up your iPad, put in the AirPods, and it knows that based on like the way you put the device, where you are, what time of day it is, it already knows that you probably want to watch YouTube. So it already loaded those some YouTube videos for you. You can just press play and it was would just be taken care of for you.
Or at least like warmed up YouTube in the background.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so it was ready to go.
It's like warming up the food, right? It goes bing. It's like it's ready. It's warm for you.
And then there's another thing that happens right after I use my iPad to watch YouTube videos. When I finish dinner, I take my iPad, I go to the couch, I sit, I stop the video on the iPad, and I have to manually turn on my Apple TV and continue the video on the TV.
Like an animal.
Like an animal, yeah. So imagine if it could detect that I just sat on the sofa.
Right.
And it just sent the video magically to my Apple TV. I mean, not having handoff between iOS devices and the Apple TV seems like a pretty huge oversight.
Yeah, it does. It really does.
Yeah, the technology is there. I guess they didn't want to bother implementing a new UI for it.
Right. And again, it's like, it feels like in a world where all the devices, like in all their signals, all their sensors was just like open and public, which would be a huge privacy concern. But imagine just that for a second. YouTube could detect that you've just put your iPad on the table. You've just closed it, right? You just put it to sleep. And you picked up the Siri remote. So some pretty clear signals that you have actually left your iPad and now you're ready to watch TV. And
but they could start playing this without sensors already. Like, if they know I'm using the YouTube app on my iPad. They know I just launched it. They know I paused the video. They know the video I was watching. They definitely know the video I was watching.
Right.
They could implement something like that already. But then I would have to still manually turn on the Apple TV, wait for it to wake up, launch the YouTube app, find the portion of the UI. But then maybe they could do it at launch, but yeah, that could be problematic depending on how well it works.
Yeah,
but I think like media handoff is a big problem that hasn't been solved yet.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's like, it sounds silly to kind of quote unquote complain about it, right? Because like, oh, I have to sit down on my couch and turn on my TV. It's so much work. But it's all about like that seamless kind of experience. And it for me, that's really kind of borderline science fiction.
Because I'm going to use a phrase I love that Ken Koshenda used in his keynote at NS North.
Yeah.
He talked about comfortable technology.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
That's the term, I think, for this.
Yeah, it just makes it seem so smooth and nice. And for me also, when an app behaves that way, you know, I just mentioned the IA Writer example. It's just a tiny little feature, right? It's probably like 5 lines of code to implement that feature, but it just makes the app so much more like fluid to use.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess we're just going to have to wait to find out just how predictive our computers can become. But if you have any suggestions, like you listening to the show, of how an app or how a workflow or something can become more predictive or something like that, let us know. Tweet at us or send an email and we'll see what we think. But now it's time to move on with the show and to go to our favorite segment, which is, of course, the Rambo Report. So Ramble, tell us, what do you have for us this week here in sunny Italy?
Yeah, so I've been hearing about the new MacBook Pro. There have been some rumors about Apple releasing a new 16-inch MacBook Pro this year. And I think that's very likely from what I heard. And I've heard some interesting tidbits about this new device. And that's not an exclusive because I know other people have heard this as well. And take this with a grain of salt, like this is not like confirmed, not that I haven't seen any evidence, it's just like people have been talking about this.
Right.
Yeah, and so apparently this new 16-inch MacBook Pro would come with a touch bar, but a physical escape key.
Yeah.
And we mentioned this in a previous episode.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
It would also feature smaller bezels around the screen.
Gotta remove all the bezels. They must go.
Yeah. But the most interesting thing is you may have heard some rumblings about the keyboard not being that great. Have you heard something about that?
No, this is the first time. The keyboard is functioning perfectly, right? Like no one needs to repair it. There's no compressed air involved, right?
Yeah, so as everyone knows, these keyboards are problematic.
Right.
Yeah. And it seems like Apple is taking a step back with the new MacBook Pro. And I heard it feels a little bit like the Magic keyboard, the tactile feeling it gives. So it's not using the butterfly mechanism.
Cool. And that's been a very common trend among like the discussions around this new keyboard. It's like, why don't they just take the Magic keyboard and put it in a laptop, right?
Exactly.
Because it's already, it's a great keyboard. You know, most people, they really like it. I love it. I use it all the time at home. It's not that thick, right? Like it can, if you just look at the keyboard and you look at your laptop, you're like, it can probably fit in here somehow, right?
Yeah.
It provides enough travel, because that's another really big complaint about the current generation keyboard, is that the keys are very flat. You know, there's not enough travel there. There's not enough punch in the keys. And I think that's also something that, I don't know, it could probably be achieved with butterfly switches as well. Because if I, for example, look at the iPad keyboard, which I'm using right now, there's a fair amount of travel in that, in those keys. Or at least, maybe it's not travel, but they feel more bouncy, right?
Yeah.
If they feel more comfortable to type on. But I would be super happy with getting something like the Magic Keyboard in a MacBook Pro.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this before. I am super happy with the Butterfly Keyboard in terms of how it feels, how it sounds, everything except for the fact that it's vulnerable to dust. So I think the Magic Keyboard for me is a good compromise between reliability and still feeling like a new keyboard. Because when I type on an old keyboard, the MacBook Pro keyboard, it feels like typing on a sponge, like it's mushy. Yeah, so I don't really like it.
Right.
So I hope they finally figure it out and that we can finally stop talking about keyboards.
Yeah, absolutely. I really hope so too. And it's something like, it's so fundamental to the laptop, right?
Yeah.
You just really want it to work and you really want it to be reliable. And that's again what I love about the iPad Pro, because I mentioned it before on the show, but like when I took my trip to Asia earlier this year, I was like in a jungle, I was on the beach, and I brought my iPad with me, and I wasn't worried at all, right? Because this keyboard is like, it's like rock solid, right? There's no way you can get any dust into it, because the keys are literally like sealed. There's cloth over them, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think they could go for something like that for the MacBook Pro, but it would be great if you could have at least like, you know, you could maybe not bring it and put sand on it, right? But if you could at least like not have to worry about it every single day.
Yeah, the problem is that it's not about eating and having crumbs on your keyboard. It's even worse. It's like really dust can have an impact. So.
Yeah.
And it's funny because with the 2018 one, they added this little membrane that's supposed to help. But in my case, I never had any issues with my 2017 one. The R key felt a little bit different than the other ones, but it worked perfectly. But with my 2018 one, I am having some issues sometimes. And they're not bad enough that I want to like bring it to an Apple store or something. It's just like sometimes some keys repeat, and that's about it so far. But it's weird, like this one is supposed to be better, and I didn't have any issues with the previous one, but I am having issues with this one.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds with all these things like it just comes down to good or bad luck, right?
Yeah.
Like sometimes you just have bad luck and you have problems. And I have a little bit similar situation to you. Like I have occasionally had problems with the keys. Like they've been getting stuck a little bit and they've been producing dual characters. But it hasn't been bad enough that I've wanted to bring it in. And I think a lot of people are in this situation.
And that's something that was discussed as well, like, because Apple uses the stats about Genius Bar appointments, and they said like, oh, it's only a small percentage of people, but it's not everyone that's going to bring it to a Genius Bar,
right?
Because not all issues are bad enough that the person is going to, because you have to leave your computer for like a week for them to fix it, or even more sometimes. So
yeah,
not everyone's gonna go through that. By the way. And I know that some people, they really don't take much good care of their MacBook Pros. I've seen some really dirty ones. John, can you report on the cleanliness of my MacBook Pro?
I wanted to say I would eat from it. That's how clean it is. But that would probably ruin the keyboard.
Yeah, I keep my MacBook Pro super clean.
Yeah, it's very clean. And I must say, I'm very impressed by your screen. Like, your screen is it looks new, right? Yeah. But this is not a new computer.
Yeah, I have a cloth in my backpack that I use to clean the screen. A microfiber.
You give it a little, you give a little spot treatment before the trip.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. Yeah, nice. I clean it with isopropyl alcohol. Yeah, I'm very careful with my babies.
That's great. Cool. So I'm excited about this. I have a plan, Rambo, about my future computing setup. Ooh. You want to hear it?
Of course.
So right now I'm using a MacBook Pro at home connected to a 4K display. I have the Magic Keyboard, right? I got the Magic Mouse. That's my setup at home. And then I got my iPad. And as I mentioned before, like, I'm really trying to move as many of my workflows as possible over to the iPad because I do like the productivity I feel like I get out of the iPad because I can focus more on each task. Also, that it's more lightweight. It's more like you can use it as a tablet if you want. You know, for example, when I'm writing my articles, I can write the article with the keyboard. Then I can detach the iPad and I can use the Apple Pencil to mark up the article and, you know, give myself notes. Like, you know, you can move this section over here. You maybe remove this word, etc., etc. So that I love the iPad for that. So my plan right now is that if the Mac Pro is, number one, what I want it to be, which is a really fast, modular, nice computer, like if we see that at WWDC, and it is not too expensive, which, you know, that second risk is really high, but let's just dream for a moment that it won't be too crazy expensive and that it will do what I want. I want to get a Mac Pro for home because when I do, like, you know, quote unquote serious iOS development or, you know, any development, I want to have like a fast computer, not my non-pro laptop that I have right now. Exactly. Right? But when I'm on the go or when I'm writing articles, when I'm doing more lightweight work, I just want to use the iPad. So that's kind of going to be my future setup, I hope. And if that doesn't work out, I want to get the Mac Mini instead. So I want to have a stationary Mac because I feel like that will just give me the best situation when I'm at my desk. And then I can also kind of be a little bit quote unquote forced to always use the iPad because I have still a few things that I use the Mac for, but I would love to move all those over to the iPad as well.
Yeah, you can always like VNC into your Mac if you need like something on a pinch. But yeah, I think that's a good setup. I am considering the iMac Pro, but I would still have a mobile Mac because I'm not as advanced with the iPad as you.
You also do different things, right? Yeah. Like you probably couldn't do your spelunking on an iPad.
Yeah, not yet, at least.
Right.
So yeah, I am considering getting myself a desktop, but the iMac Pro is probably about to be updated maybe as well. So yeah. I'm going to wait and see what happens.
It's going to be interesting to see if we see hardware at WWDC this year because yeah. There was that preview of the Mac Pro a few years ago.
Can't innovate anymore.
Can't innovate anymore, my ass.
So maybe we'll see a preview. Hopefully it will even launch, but I don't know about that. It would be cool to see MacBook Pros, but the conventional wisdom has been to never expect hardware at WWDC, but, you know, one can dream, right?
I mean, we know this WWDC is going to be packed.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if they could do, like, have, like, a separate keynote for hardware announcements at WWDC, like, right. Hardware State of the Union.
Nice, so that would be amazing. State of the hardware. All right, well, we can dream, we can hope. Let's see what's going to happen at WWDC and if I'm going to get my dream setup or not. But now we want to move on and answer some of your Ask Stacktrace questions. So just as a reminder, you can ask us any question that you want by tweeting with the hashtag AskStacktrace. That way we pick it up and hopefully we can answer your question on a future episode of the show. So first we're going to start with a question. This is a great question from our good friend Steve Troughton Smith. He wants us to talk about what's going to be new in iOS 14, Rambo.
Oh, so I just got the latest build yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and it's going to have flying cars.
Oh, awesome. I love that. Awesome. Also holograms, right?
Yeah, and it's going to fly like a drone.
Oh, perfect. You can just like throw it out of the window and it will just fly and, you know, do your groceries for you and come back.
Even with the smart battery case on.
Even with a smart battery case. It will have like really powerful thrusters. Maybe the battery case will have additional thrusters in it.
Yeah. So thanks, Steve, for the question. That was a good one.
Great question. All right. Our next question comes from Turner. And Turner wants us to talk about a little bit how to get traction as an iOS developer. So his question is, as a beginner iOS developer, how can I put myself out there and get my apps seen and potentially bought? and how to make things like an app icon and things like that. So I think this is a great question because, well, when you're becoming an iOS developer or any kind of developer, first you need to learn how to code, right? But then if you want to actually make a product and sell that product, you kind of also need to learn other things, right? Like marketing and talking to people and showing your product. So Rambo, you've been releasing quite a few products actually. You have Shibi Studio, you have AirBuddy. What's your approach to this? Like, how do you go from just coding something to actually showing it to people?
Yeah. First thing I must mention is that, of course, now I have a big following online. So anything I release, I already have a big audience. I can show that to, and that's probably going to be interested in it, especially if they're the target market. But you must remember that I didn't start like this.
Right, you didn't. Yeah. You weren't born with like many, many followers on Twitter, yeah. Or you didn't have your job at 9 to 5 Mac since you were like 2 years old.
Exactly. So keep in mind, keep this in mind. But you have to think about the marketing aspects of even if it's not like a business, even if it's just an app you're making on the side. Maybe you want to have that on your resume. That's like a really impressive thing to have in a resume, that you actually launch an app by yourself.
Yeah.
Even if your goal is not to make money, but if you want people to get your app, you should do some marketing. And there are resources to learn that. There's a really good talk. We'll try to find a link to that. It's been recorded by Marco Arment, where he talks about marketing for iOS apps.
Mm-hmm.
Because developers, they have this, like, they think about marketing as like, oh, you're lying to people.
Right.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be like that.
No, definitely shouldn't be like that. Yeah. You definitely shouldn't be lying to people. Yeah.
There is bad marketing and there's good marketing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's something you should think about. Also, like, just, and this is something Marco probably talks about in his talk, but like, just reach out to people. That can be very powerful, but you have to know how to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give some tips because I am a member of the press. So I can say what works for me. That doesn't mean it will work with others, but like, I am looking to cover iOS apps that take advantage of the system, the hardware, that have some sort of innovation in them, even if it's just like a really cool animation for something. You know, yeah. I like shiny animations.
Oh, yeah.
I can give the example of Sur, the Apple Music app. When I saw that app, I immediately wanted to cover it because it has like these really cool gestures to reach stuff at the top of the screen that I had never seen before. It has a really tasteful UI design. Has a really beautiful website. So that's like a case where I saw it and I wanted to cover it immediately. If you want to email the press, make sure you have a very brief description of what your app does, a list of features, and you have some sort of beta program.
Yeah.
It can be test flight, something like that. Don't wait until after you launch your app to the public to then talk to the press. Like, I am really disappointed when that happens. I want exclusive access to right. a beta, like at least like 2 weeks before the planned release. So that's a good thing to keep in mind. Giving people access to betas, especially people on the press, that's a really good idea.
Yeah.
And yeah, those are my basic tips. Mm-hmm. And you can get your app if you can get like one website to write about your app, that's already a big deal.
Yeah. And what you're mentioning there, I think what it really is that you're trying to like find ways to align your interest or what you're doing with other people, right? So you always have to think about what the motivations or goals of the person that you're talking to.
Yeah.
And it can be a person in the press. It can also be a person that you think might be interested in using your app and not like, you know, sending an email specifically to each person, but rather when you're like posting about it or whatever it might be. It's always important to think about those things because we both get a lot of, you know, email or messages of people who are just saying like, here's my app, right? Here's my app. But it really doesn't have that component. While, like you just say, like you want to feature things that have great animations or great UI or take advantage of great features in the OS. And funnily enough, I think that Apple has the same motivation, yeah. right? Because what's the motivation here? Well, Apple, they want to showcase great apps, right, on their platforms because that helps to sell hardware. It makes Apple look better. And the same thing for you. You want to write interesting articles that look great, that makes people want to read them, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's important to consider these things when you are building your app, not, like you say, not after launching it, but while you're building it. And I also want to point out, so you said earlier that right now you have a bit pretty big strength in that you already have a following, but of course it wasn't always that way. But I think it's also important to remember that just because like you and me or someone else who has like a website or followers on Twitter, just because we post about something doesn't mean that we'll be successful.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's like, it's just like an advantage, yes, absolutely, but it doesn't mean that we can just make a bad product and yeah. just post about it, right? Like just that doesn't work.
Launch any crappy app and everyone will buy it.
Yeah, right, yeah, doesn't work. And it's, if that would work once, it's a great way to ruin your reputation, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So I definitely think it's important to think about those things as well, where it's like, even if you don't have a large following or even if you don't have your own website, you are not in such a bad position, right?
Exactly, yeah.
If you build a great, great product, you can use the power of other websites or the internet, like people actually sharing things and retweeting things. That's what you should be focusing on, right? Not like thinking too much about like, you know, oh, I don't have thousands of followers. I will never be able to make my app work. Like, I don't think that's true.
Yeah. And also another point to be aware of is that these people on the press, like people, our folks at 9to5 Mac and even me, like we are looking for stuff to write about.
Right. Yeah, like, that's what you do.
That's our work. So there's people that someday they may be there like, oh, there's nothing to write about right now. I'm just going to sit here and then eat popcorn or something. So they are waiting for stuff. They are looking for stuff to write about. So if you think you have a really interesting product that their audience might be interested in, make sure you write to them. And how you find their contacts is super easy. Like most people on the media, they have a public email address you can find usually. Mine is on my Twitter profile. I know other people from 9to5 also have their email public. Any press website, you can go to any media site, there will be like a contact page where you can tip them stuff. So take advantage of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing I want to point out is timing. Like you say that, you know, as a writer, you want to write about cool apps, but maybe not send you the app like during WWDC,
exactly.
right? Or right before WWDC. Exactly. Like think about when you launch and how you launch and when you approach people. And kind of the final thing I want to say, which is something I do quite a lot, and it's not because of marketing, but it has like a marketing effect where I love to share things. Like anyone who has followed me on Twitter or seen my work, like I will share things like when they are in a super early stage. I will say like, here's a prototype of a markdown editor that uses the Apple Pencil or whatever it is. Like, here's this prototype. Here's something I'm thinking about. And I'm not doing that for marketing because I just love to share things and hear what people think, but it does have a marketing effect, right? So if I'm building something and I'm constantly sharing my progress and how I'm thinking and how I'm doing things, that's going to generate interest in the product, right?
Airbuddy. The first video I posted of Airbuddy on my Twitter account, that was completely fake. that was not the app.
Right.
That was just a prototype of how it was going to work.
Yeah.
And people were crazy about it.
Right.
Yeah. So then that's when I decided to really make it. So that's another trick you can do. You can like create the design of your app in Sketch or whatever. You can like maybe make a video of how it's going to work, maybe some prototype that you can do like a really cool demo.
Yeah.
And you can show that to people and see how they react. And if you see that they react really positively, you know you have a good thing to work on.
Yeah, absolutely. And it ties into the final part of this question, which is how to make an app icon. So we're talking now about making videos and maybe making designs. And if you don't have those skills yourself, or if you want to work with someone, or you know you want to, you know, someone who might do a better job, then it's great to work with other people, right? And to get other people involved and to work with someone who can maybe help you out with making app icons and things like that. But if you don't either have like the budget to hire someone, or maybe you don't have people like that who you know, you could also just start out making something simple, right? My first designs and things that I do are usually made by me. Like, for example, with my website, Swift by Sundell, the current design is actually just a Squarespace template that I just configured over time to be more like my own. But now I'm making my new website and I've hired a designer for the icons. But that's now something like 2 years down the line that I'm doing, right? Yeah. So I didn't start out by like, oh, let me hire like 10 people to build this website. It was just like me in front of Squarespace posting it. They're not a sponsor, but I like them. And now I'm kind of taking it to the next level.
Yeah, and with one thing that came with the quote-unquote flat design trend is that it's easier to make an icon that fits well with the platform without being like super into design. Like I still don't consider myself a designer, and I can make some pretty things, but it's just because I've been doing this for a while, but I'm not a designer. And like, check out this icon I make, John. This is for a hack I made, this one.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Beautiful.
That's a really nice icon. That could be an app in the App Store.
Yeah, it's like a shape and a gradient.
Yeah. So there are these websites you can go to where you can buy glyphs.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make an icon that's just like a gradient background with a white glyph in the middle.
Yeah.
And it's not going to earn an award, but
right.
But it's going to look good.
It's going to do the job, right? Yeah. And I have another website that we'll put a link to in the show notes. I don't remember the URL, but it's showing you different gradients. So there's like a huge collection of gradients.
Yeah.
So if you don't have any designer skills, you can still go to the Glyph website that Rambo will recommend and the Gradient website that I will recommend and just build an icon from those two pieces, right?
Yeah.
And another tip I want to give about that is Keynote. Like Keynote comes with a huge library of shapes.
Yeah.
And we're not only talking about like squares and rectangles. They have lots of like people and computer shapes and objects and things like that. And you can just take a gradient, take one of those shapes, boom, you can make yourself an icon, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to be a designer. And if it does the job, great, right?
You can even use Keynote to design the UI for your iOS app.
Yeah, sure.
And make a prototype, like a demo video if you want to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Cool. So that was a really great question from Turner. And our final question for this episode comes from Abhishek. And Abhishek wants us to talk a little bit about whether Apple should create a login tool or a system similar to what Facebook and Twitter and other social networks provide, where you can like log in with Twitter or log in with Facebook for privacy reasons, not to share data. So Rambo, what do you think about this?
Well, Apple already has this system.
They do, right?
They do, yeah. You can, if you have a website, you can use the CloudKit web API, which is a JavaScript framework Apple provides. You can have a button that's login with iCloud, and it opens up an Apple ID login page, and you can log in an user like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but there's a catch. Like, it's not as simple as these other services because you have to be a paid Apple developer to access this. And most websites, they don't have a paid Apple developer account. So what Apple could do is they could open this up to external developers, maybe do like just a validation that their website is legit. And that's it. Like, because Twitter and Facebook, they do have like a verification process to make sure that your website adheres to their guidelines and stuff like that. So I feel like that's something Apple could do, definitely, because they have technically they already have it. They would just have to figure out the political aspect of things, the bureaucracy.
Right, exactly. And if your app is only an iOS app, then this is perfect, right? Like using CloudKit authentication, I think, is something that is often overlooked. And this is something you brought up in your talk also at the conference where, you know, you get so much for free by using it, because if the user is signing to iCloud, which these days I don't have any stats, but I'm going to guess that most people have an iCloud account because when you set up your iPhone, you are required to sign into iCloud, right?
Yeah, they basically, they make you sign up to iCloud.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that way you get authentication for free. There's no login screens. There's no sharing data with third parties. There's no SDKs. There's just CloudKit, right? And CloudKit is great for that. And even if you use your own backend, you can use CloudKit just for the authentication.
Exactly. Yeah, you can generate a token on device and you can send that to your server. And with that, you can validate that that's a legitimate user. You can get like the user ID and you can store extra data to the user record if you want to like have like a profile of the user. So that's all doable with CloudKit on iOS apps or using their web API, and even like on Android, if you want to integrate using the REST API.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, I think the answer is yes. I do think they should, and yeah, let's hope that they make this more widespread.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, this is it for this episode of Stack Trace. So now me and Rambo, we're going to go out and have some pizza and enjoy Italy here in Milan. But it's been really great to record this episode. And let's hope we can do it again sometime, you know, with this fun hotel recording setup, our little hotel room recording studio. It's been really, really great, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Until our next episode, which will be out next week, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at John Sundell. Mr. Rambo is at _inside. Again, feel free to send us questions on Twitter using the hashtag AskStackTrace. And also, really big thanks to our good friends at Withings for sponsoring this episode. Make sure to check out this great offer before May the 3rd at withings.com/StackTrace. But that's it for this episode. So say ciao, Mr. Rambo.
Ciao.